My name is Susanna Meschini, and I come from Italy. At the moment, for a living, I work for a charity that supports women living with HIV in London, in the UK. I've done lots of things in my past. I had various jobs, but before moving into working for HIV positive people, I used to write, and I used to be a producer and writer of documentaries. I was diagnosed HIV positive the 2nd of February 1997. I remember the date very clearly because it was a day that really changed my life. I think many people might think maybe because I had kind of a very wild youth and I had problems with drugs and, you know, kind of wild lifestyle as a, you know, a young woman in my 20s. That maybe I could have expected something like an HIV diagnosis, but actually it was a complete shock, a tremendous shock. And I can hardly remember the first 6 months after I was told that I was HIV positive because I wasn't in such a state that, you know, I don't know. I think the trauma has completely erased my memory of those first few months. I think I was just crying in my room, unable to talk to anybody about what was going on. And at the time in Italy, there were no services. I wasn't referred to any kind of support service or women's group or anything. So I was pretty much on my own, and it was, you know, I think it was the darkest moment in my life.
And when you had the test, was it a test that you decided to have?
I was tested for HIV because I had just come back from Senegal, and I had malaria. I had a really, really bad bout of malaria, and I was in hospital, and the doctor could see that I wasn't recovering as well as I should have, and they saw something, I think, in my tests. But the way I was offered the test, I mean, now that I think about it, was really somebody, I think a nurse, walked in the room, and she had just this little piece of paper with like a list of tests in it with little boxes to tick, and among those tests was HIV, and she was like, so do you want to have those tests? And it was, and I just ticked this box without having really many thoughts about the consequences of taking the tests. I wasn't really prepared, or I don't think it was really much of a choice. It was just something like, the doctor thinks we should do this test, just tick this box and see how it goes. And I had to wait for 3 weeks for my results, and I was discharged from hospital, and then, you know, I had to wait for 3 weeks. And I remember when I went back to the hospital, there wasn't really, I think, a procedure to give people's tests back, and it was like nobody wanted to give me the result of this test. So I kept walking from one hospital room to another hospital room, and everybody was sending me somewhere else. And as I walked through those corridors, I just like started getting really, really nervous because just didn't seem right. And until I arrived in this room when somebody say, oh yeah, it's you, and they just scribbled on a piece of paper something like, this is to certify that Susanna is HIV positive, and they just gave me this piece of paper written, you know, Susanna is HIV positive and she's entitled to free medical care or something like that. And I just like look at the paper and look at the doctor, and I think I fainted. I fainted and I started to cry and cry and cry, and they were just like, they didn't know what, how to do. They were like, oh, nobody told you before, you know. And, you know, that was how, you know, how they gave me my results, which is, you know, thinking about it, quite shocking. I don't think anybody should be given such a result like that. After I was diagnosed, I think I went through one of the most difficult times in my life. Apart from being diagnosed with HIV, at the time I didn't have a job, and my father was very ill with Alzheimer, and as in many places as a woman, I was one of the main carers for my father. So I had to deal with that, deal without having a job. I wasn't in a relationship, I didn't have any money, and I thought I was going to die, a very horrible death. In my hospital, I wasn't given any information about ARVs. They just mentioned very vaguely that there was some medication available, but, you know, not. I remember they said, you know, not everybody's going to get it. We have to make sure that people are going to be, like, good patients or something before they get the medications. And so I really didn't know much about it, and I was, you know, I was dealing with my father's illness. I was dealing with so many personal issues. I mean, as I said, you know, as a young woman, I was into drugs and and you know, every kind of life said everything was caused by quite deep emotional instability, depression, low self-esteem, and on top of all of this, you put an HIV diagnosis. I was just like unable to talk to anybody really, because also I felt, because of my past, that in a way I was responsible, and you know, all the messages are, you know, people, HIV is for certain kind of people, and I felt that it was like by being diagnosed HIV positive, I was like stamped with the proof that there was like the ultimate proof that I wasn't, you know, I wasn't valuable. So it was impossible to talk to anybody about my diagnosis, especially at the beginning, because I thought that everybody would say, well, what do you expect? You know, with the kind of life you deserve, you've almost been looking for it or something. And, you know, it took me a few months, but after a while, I had some really, really close friends, you know, and I told them about my diagnosis, and they were supportive, they were understanding. But I remember, I mean, two of my closest girlfriends, they were both pregnant, and they were just in this moment in their life. They were 30 years old like me, and they were planning for those fantastic life ahead of them. And I was like, God, I just felt so disconnected from everybody because I felt I didn't have a future. So even the support I got never made me feel I could overcome this sense of tremendous solitude and isolation. And if I was suffering with depression and low self-esteem before, I think the HIV diagnosis amplified all those feelings.
But then things moved on.
You know, after this year of complete darkness and despair, I went for a job in India, and I spent about 6 months in India, and something happened there. I mean, apart from being in countries which are more poor than yours and which people face so much hardship, I just felt, you know, that even if I had HIV, I still, you know, there was still something for me. I really went through a kind of soul-searching and moment, and I realized that even if I didn't have much to live, which was like what I believed at that time, then the most important thing was the present. The most important thing was what I was going to do with my life, with whatever I had left. And I said, if I don't have much to live, I want my life to be meaningful. But I just had this idea that what I really wanted to do, because I also spent before in a lot of time in Africa, traveling and then doing some work. So I decided that, you know, I wanted to work maybe for an NGO in Africa, supporting people living with HIV. Just out of the blue, this idea came in my mind. So I said, well, I can go back maybe to university, get some qualification in development, and that's what I did. So I just took every job I could. I went back to waitressing, doing translations, and working at a reception in an office. I had about 3 jobs, and I was also looking for, after my father, that was getting worse and worse with Alzheimer's. And when I look back, I really don't know where I got the strength to do that. But, you know, I managed, you know, to save, I think I had to save like £2,000 or something like that. So I saved those £2,000. And in 1999, I moved to London and started the degree. I moved to London with £100 and the money for my fees. I started treatment, I think, just before moving to London. And I think when I got to London, halfway through, I just got completely burned out. I didn't have anybody in London I told about my status. And I think even when I went to hospital, there were a lot of, you know, I started my care in London. But there were all these assumptions for me being kind of a white, middle-class woman back to university. Nobody ever referred me to any support services. I think I project this image of strength, you know, while, you know, part, and I am very strong, but part of me is very vulnerable as well and fragile. So, you know, even in London, it took me maybe 8 or 9 months before I got referred. I found out, not even got referred, because it was a gay friend of mine that told me about it, a women's group, a Positively Women. And at that point, I was really, really low. Even the doctors had advised me to go on antidepressant, because I was just like, I couldn't stop crying again. I just started crying every day. It was so hard to be back at university. And, you know, I felt so lonely. My father was in the ultimate stage of Alzheimer's, was nearly dying. And, you know, my mother had already died when I was 19, and I was very close to him. So when finally this gay friend of mine told me, look, there is a women's group for HIV positive women, why don't you try and go? Maybe, you know, maybe it might help you. And, you know, I'll never forget the feeling of walking in this room and seeing all these women, some of them looking so well, seeing children, hearing stories that made my story look easy in comparison, and I just like couldn't believe it. And I think that there was the biggest turning point after my diagnosis to meet other women living with HIV was, you know, the real turning point in my HIV diagnosis. And I just talked with women that showed me so much strength, so much pride, so much acceptance of who they were, and I think that's when I started accepting who I was. It helped me. I also started going for counseling, and that's, I think, when I started dealing with it. I decided to volunteer for Positively Women, doing outreach in hospitals and in the community to give support to other women living with HIV. And then after, I think, 6 months, POST became available for somebody to do support for women outside London. So I applied for the job, and you know, it was great that there was an HIV organization that was employing women, you know, living with HIV in London, which is not the case in many places. But I had the opportunity, and I started my work there, and you know, it was an amazing journey, really. One of the way that HIV has affected my personal life, of course, is multi-layered, and it has affected my life in so many ways. I think in an area that probably would have been maybe very different if I hadn't been HIV positive, is maybe it would have been easier for me to have a relationship and to have children. And I think the HIV has really impacted on these areas. I didn't talk about my dreams or my hopes for a family or for a child for almost 2 years, because I almost thought when I was HIV positive, well, I'm gonna die, of course I'm not gonna have a family, and nobody told me anything. But I remember the first time I arrived in London, I had this doctor, a woman doctor, and I said, well, I'd like to know a little bit more about getting pregnant and, you know, and having a baby as an HIV positive woman. I'll never forget this, because she took her glasses off, she looked at me, and she paused for a long time, and you know, there was really something in her body language that was saying, don't you think you got enough to deal with? You know, now you want to also try and have a baby, you know, you got HIV, you got, you know, you're depressed, you're dealing with all these things, you know. It just, like, it was clear that she was disapproving. And then she went on, like, saying, yes, now there are lots of things to stop passing HIV to the babies. But everything about her body language and her attitude towards me was saying, oh, I really don't think this is a good idea. And I was so fragile at that time that I thought, well, maybe it isn't a good idea. And I really pushed it at the back of my mind. Finally, when I was in my late 30s, I finally got in a kind of stable relationship, and I talked again to a doctor about getting pregnant. And, you know, this time the doctor was very, very supportive, but I was also 39 years old, and she said, the chances for you to get pregnant are not very good. And, you know, and I got all the explanation about self-insemination and all the techniques about getting pregnant. And for me, well, you know, I think it had a very, very heavy impact on my relationship, because, first of all, I don't think they give you enough support at the hospital. I mean, all I was given was like a piece of paper explaining, you know, how to calculate when you're fertile or how to detect it. And then they just give you this syringe with a big piece of plastic, like a tube attached, and they tell you to, you know, to collect the sperm with that and self-inseminate. But it's not that easy, first of all. It sounds easy, but it's not, because, you know, there are a lot of things there. It's air that gets in the syringe and things, and it's just like a bit awkward, and it puts a lot of stress on the relationship. I think it would put a lot of stress on a relationship without having to deal also with the HIV and all the fears around that within intimacy.
Tell us a bit about the work that you're doing now.
The work I do now for Positively Women is quite varied, but since I started, I think I feel it's one of the most important parts of my job, centered on giving support to women who are HIV positive, who are in prison. So I've been visiting women in Holloway Prison, which is one of the male women's prison in London, since, you know, for the past 7 years, and giving them, you know, emotional and practical support. And those are women that go through a lot of hardship. And very often, you know, I am the only person that they can talk about what they're going through, their HIV. Very often, either they don't have contact with their family, or they don't want to disclose to their families, or anyway, you know, they cannot obviously go to a support group or let anybody know in prison about their status, because when that happens, you know, anything can happen to them, bullying, physical violence, even more isolation. So the visits that Positively Women has provided them, I think have been for those women a real lifeline.
So let's just talk about criminalization of transmission, which is increasing around the world, and how this particularly affects women in relation to transmission of HIV to their children or to their partners.
I believe criminal prosecution of HIV is extremely damaging to all people living with HIV, and especially to women that already have so many fears around relationships and disclosure. Criminal prosecution of HIV promotes a culture, a society in which HIV transmission is seen as a crime. HIV positive people are seen as a threat, as something dangerous, and it doesn't promote a culture of solidarity, a culture of support, a culture of embracing people living with HIV as part of our community, as we are. And for women, it gets really confusing, because if transmitting HIV is a criminal act, even by having babies, and you know, women in a way are vulnerable. In some countries, have been even persecuted for transmitting HIV to their babies, because there is, you know, the potential of HIV transmission in during pregnancy. Even if nowadays, with proper intervention, women can have almost 99% of the times positive women will have negative children. Still, there is the fear that if you transmit HIV to your baby, will you be persecuted for that? So for me, it is crucial that we develop a society that embraces people living with HIV, a society that supports us. It is really, really scary that 25 years into the epidemics, we can see such a spread of the use of those laws all around the world. As a woman living with HIV, my dream is to just be recognized as a woman like any other. I'm somebody who works, I'm somebody who has a family, I'm somebody who has a sexual life. I'm not asking for nothing else than what I feel should already belong to me.